All right. You know what day it is. You know what time it is. And it is time for the Insight Hour. Yes. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. And yes, this is the voice of Reverend Roxy. In a world that is now engaged in so many fronts, I only have one direction in which to look. And that is up, and that is in to the Insight Hour. Oh, yes, I looked up, and it was 6 o'clock here on the Big Island. That's right. And in the East Coast, midnight. And over there on the West Coast, 9 o'clock. So you know what time it is. Oh, yeah, you know, tonight I'm feeling just like I just want to bust for all the appreciation that I have for this life that I have been given to live and the wonderful things that I get to do and to pray about and to have people calling on the phone and telling me about. And I just know that I have to give it up to the Creator, because that's just how we do it here in the Insight Hour. For first, we have to give appreciation to the Infinite One. Uh-huh. You know, I just want to thank everyone out there who is listening right now, and I want to bless everyone out there with the kind of fortune that you deserve in being so tenacious and so worthy to be able to know what really is the real deal, what really is important. It's important. We know that we protect the sanctity of our blood and our minds and our bodies. And that's with the Insight Hour, with the help of the One, is how we get the job done. And as we begin to weave this truth within our own personal lives, and then we pull up to the table if we are able, not if we are invited, for we are all invited, for this is the true ism of the true. Oh yes, that we are all one, that we all possess the breath of life, that we are all created in the glorious image of the One, in the light, in the glory of the truth. Oh, what is possible in our lives, and how truth works, how we too can all win. This is the matter. This is the subject matter for tonight. I am humbled by all that is happening in the world. It drives me to my Bible, for I have seen these times before. I must now stand poised and ready to accept the effects of the causes that are being made, and I pray that they will bear good fruit for the future generation. I pray. I can't give one negative piece of information to anything that is coming on today. This is why I release it all to the Creator. I know the value of investigating the past only to make sense of my present. I am thankful that God has given me a memory that serves me and a hand that serves me. And I know that all of you out there listening this evening are also in that glorious position of appreciation, for you have been following the way, and however we have arrived, we are here this evening, this day, this glorious new tomorrow, which is now. And I can only show my appreciation to the one by mirroring the one under the sun. And with that, I say amen. And welcome. You know, got the convention going on over there. Dr. Lin, he's away. He's doing what he needs to do to bring about, yes, you know, live H2O.org. You know, for a minute, I'm just going to let you stew in your own juices for a second, because I want you to appreciate some of the musicians that we are calling together for this mighty event that will be happening June 19th, 20th, and 21st in 9 locations all over the earth. Oh, yes. And you can be a part of this, and you can help us do this demonstration, this celebration, bringing your and lending your voice to this glorious situation. And we are preparing. And as you know, it don't cost money to have fun, but it does cost money to throw a great event. And so therefore, as you listen and as we gather and as we do, we need your help. Dr. Leonard Horowitz needs your help, because we are going into the musical aspect of this situation. This is the only solution. It was David, and like they say, give me that old-time religion. It was good for little David, and it's good for all of us, and it is about the music. Celebrating. Beating those instruments described in the Bible, in Psalms, for those of you who are into the Old Testament, as we bring ourselves forward to the new, we begin to renew and we begin to revive. So Reverend Roxy is telling you that whoever and what ever it is that you believe, let us revive it in the spirit of the oneness and stand together on that day, on the summer solstice, sending the joyous message up and out into the waters, affecting change. All you have to do is go and do your homework. Do as Dr. Lin says, your due diligence. And understand, we are in a situation here where the waters are being threatened by our very thoughts. Imagine all of the insane playing, all of the pain and the suffering. We are affecting the very waters that we drink. This is why we caution all in their thoughts. Oh yes, they're like a mighty flow. And they can do a lot of good, you know. And they can also do a lot of harm. So this is the reason why we pray before we say and before we play. We give it all up to God, because God will guide us. Now, this is the faith that we must bring to not only our body itself, but our body politic. And that is all I'm going to say about that. Now, I've been left this charge, and until I hear a beep, I am going to entertain you with the thought of world peace. I'm going to try and remind you of where we have been and where we may be going. And it all is so glorious. Yes, it is. So, we are talking about a revival. That, to me, is what this is about, because we were all there before. We all know it all. Let's see. We have the knowledge of good and evil, and it is up to us to gravitate towards good and to put evil aside. Then you will see what a glorious world this really is, and the insane playing will stop and we'll be able to see ourselves as one and know that there's enough for all, even those who are at the top. And, you know, I really, really have to say this because I learned this a long time ago. I know the difference between a dictatorship and a democracy, and I hope you do too, because it may be important for you to be able to make the distinction. And for me, the distinction is this, is that in a dictatorship, it operates from the top down. And in a democracy, it functions from the bottom up. In a perfect world, it's bilateral by nature. Now, that's all I'm going to say about that. Yeah, the cornerstone of my faith is prayer. The cornerstone of my faith is all that Jesus recorded orally to his apostles. That is to say that when you open up the New Testament, there's great wisdom. There's great wisdom in all the books of inspiration that lead you to an appreciation of the Creator of the One, the Son of Man, who purportedly was bestowed the honor of being the Son of God, Jesus Christ, or as Dr. Lynn says, Yeshua in his language, by any term and any pronunciation. The appreciation of this one and the modeling of this one by one by one by all of us could only lead us to the kind of world we want to live in, the kind of world in which people speak to each other, look into each other's eyes, for they are the window to the soul, and operate with great modesty and with great humility, always checking, always researching, always working, always praying. It's a tough job, but we all have to do it. Strengthening this world, 144,000 at a time, should be an easy feat for a world that has been manipulated for so long in the billions at a time. Think about that. I'm speaking slowly tonight, for an hour is a long time when you're free-flowing until you hear a beep. So I'm going to fill it in with a little more Scott Huckabee. Yes, and this is an artist who is with the Tetrahedron Records. Yes, and you've heard Dr. Len talk about him, and they're all involved in this live H2O.org concert. What you're listening to is a cut off of Tickling the Angels. It's off the Rain Dancer album. We have many musicians who are being scheduled, and we are hoping to bring to the Big Island and other locations to be a part of the celebration in the nation. Yes. And that's the day when all the musicians will play in the key of life, yes, in the key, and they will play with love in their hearts, and that music will be transmitted across the world for all to keep and for all to listen to and to add to, for it will be the music of the things that happen, for that is the love frequency. Oh yes, reverence to the Creator, yes. It's not just saying it, it's showing it. That's where the revival comes in. That's why That's what revivals are all about, bringing all people to renew their faith in the One and then to conduct their behavior accordingly. That's not too much to ask, is it? It's not too much to ask of your free will, is it? Ah, yes. And in practice, you will seek perfect, and in perfection, it will come with perfect practice. Oh, yeah. All right, so that's Scott Huckabee, and I can only tell you, you can go to tetrahedron.org or go to, I get confused because there's so, it's embarrassing, you know, I should just put them all up on a list and have it right in front of me, but sometimes it doesn't work out like that. I'm in the jungle, so I apologize for that, but if you want to know more about who you're listening to, you can, Dr. Lynn will be back next week. You can ask him if you have a question. I was thinking, you know, tonight they had the convention, and tonight it was all about Clinton and Hillary and the Hillary followers and the Democratic convention, and I thought, what an interesting way in which to, I had some observations, but most of all, my impression of the convention is more like American Idol goes politic. And I don't know if anybody else out there feels this way, but when you find that the election news is in the entertainment section, you know that you are on to something. And I know that a lot of you might have listened to Mission Possible, and on that show I talked about the Bronfmans, and if you type them in, it's Canadian distillers, and they made a lot of money, and they had a bank, Harris Bank, in Chicago, and there's just too many similarities, but their children, the children of these distillery and Canadian distillers, and they kind of, New York, Canada, if that gives you any clue, they do a lot of things in a real theatrical kind of way, and it's kind of interesting that a lot of the Obama news is in the entertainment section, and this is is kind of interesting to me, who have been following political and studying political elections for a long time, and the types of changes in the parties are similar in both parties, and the people that were alive back in 72 that is still alive today, I'm sure they have a lot to say about how it's all changed and to what end it will all come. I have my own thoughts about the Democratic Leadership Council, and I have my own thoughts about Democratic leadership in general, you know, as I watched them come to the forefront. I was in San Francisco, and my father and I, my father, Dangerous George Williams, he was very aware of the changes, because one of the first things that happened was to get out to vote was not really, there was no money this time around, and were they interested? They were not interested. It was almost as if they were saying back then, we don't need your vote, and we don't need your district, and want to do what we need to do, and we just took kind of like a backseat and looked at this, and then when the Democratic Party nominated Bill Clinton, I had to sit up in my seat, because now I am very aware of who he is. I'm not really interested in any, I mean, because when we all get to heaven, he gonna get whatever it is that's got coming, we will be able to watch it from a very special point of view. But if I was to chapter and verse talk about Arkansas, and I was to start with Fulbright and just work my way up, I think that we could, through the Justice Department itself, make a case for how and what and why we got Bill Clinton in 1992, and George Bush had to take a back seat. But you can't tell where Bush begins and where Clinton ends in terms of the body politic, because of the types of people who are backing both sides of the party. And that goes down to understanding what that's all about. And when you begin to look at some of the major power brokers, when you begin to understand how the Rockefellers went to Arkansas, how it all worked through the brothers and how they all got a piece and how it all worked in Texas and how they all worked together and how the Democratic Party may have a leadership council within inside of itself, but basically it also has a very powerful southern bloc that when pushed or backed up will always vote with the conservative Republican Party. So you got an interesting dynamic getting ready to happen, and when I look back just 16 years, you can go back, and you're in 1992, right? And if you really ask yourself, is that a fair place for us to look at what has happened to America, what is going on in the Democratic Party? We have words like the New Democrat. Well, of course, these are words that come out of people's mouths who are not on the up and up. They have to redefine everything all the time. Keep us on our feet. And we have to remember who these people are and that they're still around. And when you look over the shoulders of both candidates, you can see them waiting in the wings. And I'm not sure whether America really understands what's getting ready to happen. But there is, I pray, that folks will become more aware of their spirituality, because if you don't and you begin to look to the government to fix things for you, irregardless of how much change is coming, there is so much waste. There is so much legislated poison. There's so many microbes. There's so many cowboys. There's so many things that we're going to have to all change so much that they stand out like a sore thumb. And then if they cloak themselves in the newness of what it is that we all become as citizens, then they will too act as if, and it will soon be a reality that they too can be redeemed and see the goodness of waging peace as opposed to war on all sides. It is true. You know, this is BBSRadio.com, and yes, you are listening to the Insight Hour, and it is brought to you by OxySilver. OxySilver.com. Go there. Check it out. We're not talking about colloidal silver here. We're talking about a specific type of mineral water when added to your daily regime. You be the guinea pig. You get the results. But you can't get better unless you take some kind of medicine. And it was promised to us that it would taste good, that it would not harm. So we are talking about something that works on a real small level. You know, Reverend Roxy don't understand all that scientific mumbo jumbo, but I do understand that all that scientific mumbo jumbo is going on automatically in my body. Thank goodness, thank God, thank all that we function correctly and that we want to continue to function correctly. Yes. So, maintain yourselves and check out OxySilver.org. No, .com. Yes. It's the new opportunity for your body to stay healthy, for it is those times when they want us to roll up our sleeves. Oh yes, they even now saying that measles is on the rise. And I say, what? Measles? I had them. You know? They say that people who are not vaccinated, they're the reason that measles is coming back. I want them to prove these statements. They just shouldn't say these kind of things, because when they say these kind of things, it spooks the herd. And without... Hello?
Hello.
Oh, I thought... Hi, let me turn down this beautiful music here. Who's that on the line?
It's Mitch, Reverend Roxy.
Hi, Mitch.
Hey, how are you?
I'm so glad that you called in. Everybody, this is Mitch Fine. This is a good friend of Dr. Lennon mine. Ha 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 ha. Here's a little poem, right? Spontaneous. Yeah, did you hear me? I was talking about OxySilver, talking about health, you know?
I did catch the first part of the show.
Oh, well, you know, I'm hoping that, well, you know, everybody, Mitch is over there in Florida, and I wanted him to call in tonight because we had been talking prior to the show, and I thought that I would, I always like to get information that's fresh, and I always like to get information that's really helpful for people, and Mitch has got some insight because Mitch has got a mama who's in a care center, in a care situation. Why don't you explain it, Mitch?
Okay,
hello,
RJ. Yeah, I'm here in Florida, Southern Florida, and my mom right now is in ICU at Boca Community Hospital, and she's there with emphysema and COPD. And she's been in and out of hospitals and skilled nursing facilities and nursing homes for the last half a year. So I've had a good chance to get a real good glimpse of the system. And my father, before that, he died 2005, but he was in and out of hospitals for 10 years. So I've really sort of been at the table here with a ringside seat of the kind of care that's been present at the best hospitals. My father was at the University of California, San Francisco, which is a teaching hospital, considered one of the best in the world. And my mother's here in Florida, not necessarily at the best hospitals, but regional medical centers. So this is, you know, considered some of the best medical care in the world. And I don't know if any of your listeners happen to see the article today in U.S. News and World Report. But the title of the article in the magazine was, "If Medicine is So High-Tech, Why Is There So Much Illness?" And, you know, just observing what I've been able to observe in the last 6 years, six months with my mom and 10 years with my dad, I think I've got a pretty good handle on what the problems are.
Really?
And, if you want to get into it, I'm happy to discuss it. But
I would love to get into it because it's Insight Hour. And to give us a little insight, I mean, to share, it's not so much that... It's the experience as much as the interpretation of the experience, and I value your insight, Mitch. Are you up for it?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, obviously the microcosm is my mother and my father, but I think there's a larger issue here that affects, you know, all Americans. And one of the things that I've observed is the power and the presence of Medicare. These hospitals are so beholden and so intertwined with the Medicare system that it's really the federal rules and the Medicare system which really governs the administration and administering of medicines and care. And Medicare revolves around a thing called DRGs, and this is a diagnostic related group. And essentially what that is, if you come into the hospital and you have a heart attack or you have lung cancer, or you have a broken bone, everybody gets what they call a DRG attached to them. And that DRG determines how much Medicare will pay the hospital. So, for example, if you come in with a broken bone, a broken femur, Medicare is going to pay the hospital X amount of dollars. If you're in that hospital for one day or 100 days, that hospital is going to get the same amount of money. So it creates a system where the hospital is incentivized to get the patient out of there as soon as possible. Now, some people will say, well, it incentivizes to get the patient out of there well. If you want to break the bone, you don't want to be in the hospital, you want to get out. The problem is whether you're well or not well, there's an incentive to move you out of the hospital system. So this creates a conflict for doctors, for nurses, which are, you know, let's say in best case scenario, trying to deliver good health care, and the hospital, which basically has to keep its doors open. Because what happens is if you run out or exhaust what Medicare is going to pay in the DRG, then the hospital becomes liable for those money. So basically Medicare, let's say, so if my mother is in the hospital with a trach, which she has, Medicare will pay, let's say, $6,000 for a trach. So after 2 weeks, 3 weeks, that $6,000 is exhausted. if my mother is still in the bed, in a hospital bed, then Medicare says, okay, you get $6,000. If Mitch's mother stays in that hospital one more day, you're responsible financially for every day after that. So it creates an incentive for the hospital then to say to me, get your mother out of here, which they have no problem doing and have been doing. And that's the battle I'm fighting right now. She's not stable, and she's got her respiration, her kidneys, her functions are not stabilized, but there's a tremendous incentive now for the hospital to say, out. And this is a thing that I'm fighting legally with them right now.
I mean, and it's amazing, because this is a program that's been going on for a long time. I mean, you would think that it would it was supposed to be to bring about, you know, a better way of dealing with our health insurance coverage, right? I mean, is
Absolutely.
That the way it is? Is that the way it is with private insurance
what
companies
happens,
too?
The problem is our Medicare system is broke. There's no money to fund hospital care. And, you know, obviously we could go on for hours about how much we're spending each week in Iraq and the billions of dollars that we're wasting there. Rather than take that $1 billion per week plus that we're spending in Iraq and put it in our hospital system, we basically dump it in a hole in the ground. And this is basically a great sucking sound. So the money has to come from somewhere. So the money is coming out of our hospital systems, it's coming out of healthcare, it's coming away from seniors, it's coming away from our regulatory agencies, which are charged with looking for our food and all the preventative stuff that we could do on the front end so that people don't end up with these debilitating illnesses. And they land in these hospitals, and then there's just not the money. The hospital that my mother is being treated at right now lost $110 million last year. And they're laying off 80 people, the hospital. So it's not that these are bad people. These are people that are caught in a bad system. And let me tell you, Reverend, it's going to get worse, because Medicare now has, because the system is broken and busted, and it's only getting more so. So now there is a new rule that's coming down for Medicare where doctors and the hospitals used to be paid separately. So, for example, a doctor would be paid even if Medicare said to the hospital, okay, there's no more money for the patient, like in my mother's case. You have the trach, it's $6,000, it's all you get. The doctor for treating my mother would still be paid. Next year, and I believe it's next year, the doctor now will get his money from the hospital, her money from the hospital. So now, when Medicare turns to the hospital and says there's no more money, both the hospital and now the doctor will be pitted against the patient, because neither of them will be paid. At least the doctor continues to get paid even though the hospital doesn't, creating a system where at least there's somebody advocating the patient's position. Now there will be nobody. And this, people don't realize this is coming, and this is really going to be the final screw in the coffin of getting long-term health care in this country in a hospital setting.
That's very true, because we are dealing with a growing population of aged people, and if they aren't handling and dealing with so how old is your mother?
77.
77, and they are reporting now more Medicaid fraud, or Medicare fraud. Is this the difference between Medicaid and Medicare, right?
Medicaid is a system that's set up for indigent people. So that when your net worth is $2,000 or less, and only then are you entitled to Medicaid. If you've got any assets, the government is going to come and they're going to say you have to spend that down to $2,000, and then you will get Medicaid. And Medicaid is a system for long term, or when your hospitalization under Medicare is gone. So, for example, if you're in a skilled nursing facility under Medicare, you get 100 days. Once those 100 days are exhausted, you're on your own, and then your assets will be taken away, and then when you have $2,000 or less, Medicaid will step in and say, we'll pay now. So that's the system.
Oh, here it is. By 2030, as the baby boom generation retires, that is projected to drop to 2.4 workers for each beneficiary, and Medicare spending is expected to grow by about 7% per year for the next 10 years.
Well, there's no money now.
So how, you know, This is the reality that we're trying to bring on the inside hours. How do you creatively finance a program like this? How do you balance a budget like that? How do you guard against fraud and waste? Well, these are the issues that lead us to the point where they're, you know, kind of being awful, terrible to your mother in terms of what, you know, like, yeah, get out of here. You got to go.
Right, but everybody in your audience, Reverend, who's, you know, a baby boomer, who's relying on the fact that they've been paying into Social Security all their lives, and when they retire, you know, because Medicare is a derivative of Social Security, and we all know about what's happening with Social Security. So everybody thinks, hey, when I go into the hospital, there's going to be Medicare, and I've got hospitalization, I've got insurance to take care of it. But that's not true. So the first thing that people have got to get, the insight has to come about that there's not going to be any safety net here for people in 2, 3, 4, 5 years. There's just no money in the system.
Well, then what would you say to people as they begin to, you know, they're paying into this system? It seems to me to be awful corrupt to make people to pay to voluntarily or compel them to pay into a system that isn't going to be able to provide them services in the future.
Reverend, my question to you,
uh-huh.
And this is something that I know you've researched and you have spoken in the past quite eloquently about, is we know where the money is going. You can't fight this war that we're doing in the Middle East and pay the amount of money and expend the amount of resources without it coming from somewhere. There's no free lunch here. And, you know, what is it? Who said that at some point we all come back to a banquet of consequences? And we are coming back. We are going to sit down to a banquet of consequences of what is happening right now. We are spending money each week, billions of dollars a week, that we don't have, and it's going to come from somewhere. And it's coming, and what I'm saying from my point of view here on the ground, inside the hospital system, it's coming right from here.
And we don't even have enough people. Doctors are becoming a problem, too. I mean, even if we had a system that worked, we're starting to lose all our doctors.
Well, who's going to want to practice medicine when Medicare, when you bring a patient in the hospital and Medicare says, okay, we're going to pay you $10,000 for that, and then the doctor spends however much time, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 of his time, energy, and resources, his or her time, and resources fixing the problem, and then submits a bill to the hospital for $30,000, and then the hospital turns around and says, Medicare's only paid us 10, we're taking 9, here's 1,000 for you. What kind of incentive is that for people who are practicing medicine? They've got families, they've got children, what happens to them? So the doctors and the hospitals aren't bad folks here. They're just trapped into a system that's broken.
It's so broken. And when you think about it, you think about the care that's given inside the hospital, and then you think about the care in the outpatient, and then you think about the prescription drug, the whole thing in terms of how people get all their prescription drugs. If that ever was interrupted, oh my goodness, I mean, that would create serious chaos all the way around for a lot of people. And that's why I think it's important that people really understand that we should push these candidates in really getting them to verbalize and articulate what we're being confronted with, because it's very real to you, and you're
the other thing that I want to impress on your listeners,
uh-huh,
is I don't sit with Michael Moore on this. If you watch Sicko and you listen to Michael Moore's thesis, Michael Moore says we just need more health care. I'm totally against that idea, because if you watch, a lot of the health care that is delivered is unnecessary and wrong. Here's an example of what happened to my mom just today.
Okay.
She had an upset stomach. They just changed her food. They're giving her more protein in her feeding. Rather than looking at that and saying, let's look at the food, they gave her contrast dye x-ray and said, well, let's look at physiologically what's happening in the abdomen. Maybe that is necessary, but before they do that, they should just change the feeding, because that's the simplest, most cost-effective way to deal with an upset stomach. So, again, they take this very high-tech hammer when a simple nutritional fix will do. So, again, we've got to, you know, if there is a solution here, it's sometimes you need these very complex medicines and sophisticated technology, but a lot of times common sense and simple solutions go a lot farther and are a lot more cost-effective for a system. We have to train our doctors and our medical personnel that sometimes high-tech isn't always good tech.
Well, isn't it true that, they have a manual that they, isn't it go to the point where it's almost in the, it has to change within the medical school practice itself in terms of how you respond? Because where does malpractice come into that?
Great question, RJ. And that's exactly right. Because if somebody comes in with a pain in their shoulder or a pain in this, you know, the doctor can look at it and say, oh, you've got a pain in your shoulder. But now, if that's close to the heart or could be potentially related to the heart, if that doctor doesn't do the x-rays or the CAT scans or the EKG or the EEGs and all those sophisticated tests, what could happen is if that person then has a heart attack, the lawyers come back on the other end and say, look, that person came in with shoulder pain. You should have done these tests, and you didn't do them. So the doctors, in an attempt to cover themselves and protect themselves from the second guessing by attorneys, do all these complex, unnecessary tests because, like you say, they don't want to be sued for malpractice.
And the responsibility of those who are now, even today, gets more complicated because we are starting to see diseases that are engineered because of the genetically modified ways in which they're dealing with creating bacteria for vaccines and also for foods and all kinds of fads and things like that. Who's responsible for all of that? See, everybody wants, in corporate world, wants to stand back and say, the innovation is great. Put it out there. But no one wants to be responsible for the effect it might have on us as organisms. And we're caught between a rock and a hard place here because we're starting to see more and more people snapping from these prescription drugs that they're having problems, even with these nicotine patches and nicotine things to get people off of smoking. If they stop taking them, they get real, you know.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right on that, Reverend. You know, one of the most frightening things that I've read in the last month is the genetic manipulation that's going on with human genomes being injected into chicken yolks. They have now, the geneticists have now discovered that chickens and the chicken egg is closer to the human blood serum than is than our mice. And so what's happening is that human genes are being injected into chicken blood, and this is becoming the foundation for therapeutic proteins and also our vaccines and our insulin is all going to be this hybrid chicken-human genome. So actually, when we're getting these vaccines, it's in a sense cannibalism because we're eating our own genome. And this, I don't know where this ends, but it's a very, very scary trail. And I know Dr. Horowitz talks about this and opened my eyes to what's happening on this level of research. But it's no longer research. It's actually happening in these vaccines are now literally these hybridizations of human and chicken genes.
Yeah, you know, it's really true. And it's incredible in terms of my research in the 50s and the 60s in terms of what they used as the host to get into, it would be incredible, but they've even used armadillos to, generate and to produce more disease, because that's what vaccines are all. First, you have to have a lot of the disease in order to make the vaccine, and this is what's so insane about the whole thing, is that God doesn't make and did not make this critter to overtake us. It was man's manipulation that let the genie out of the bottle and thought he was so clever that he could contain these things. But there's no way to contain it. It keeps popping up in the crowd. You know, like I was telling my people that are listening tonight, they're saying measles is coming back, you see.
The worst thing that anyone that goes into a hospital faces is what they call these man-made or iatrogenic infections. And what happens is that because of the rampant inappropriate use of antibiotics in medicine, people develop these germs, these biological entities develop resistance because people get a cold, they prescribe antibiotics. Our chicken, our meat, our food supply is filled with these antibiotics because of the conditions that these animals are kept in are very prone to disease. And so the feed contains antibiotics. They pump the animals with antibiotics. And when we eat those antibiotics, we create these super bugs that are resistant to these normal antibiotics that we use for medicine. So when somebody comes into the hospital today, they're faced with this thing called MRSA, which is a super bug. It's methicillin-resistant Streptococcus aureus. And if you go walk down the hallway of any hospital, you'll see these placards which say, extra precaution, must gown up, must use gloves, because these super bugs are just rampant in hospitals. And anybody who comes in the hospital and leaves the hospital potentially brings these bugs home or out into the population. And we're using stronger and stronger and stronger antibiotics. And these bacteria are building immunity at a faster and faster pace. And what happens is when you take these super antibiotics into your system, they have to be excreted by the kidneys and the liver. And this is, again, what happened to my mother. She came into the hospital with an infection. They gave her these super antibiotics, and her kidneys collapsed. And then she had to be on dialysis. So it's a vicious cycle that once you get sick, it's very hard to get out of. And it's a monster of our own making.
It kind of makes you wonder where their oath, the Hippocratic Oath, actually, why they bothered to take an oath. I mean, it's kind of like an oath with a lot of conditions at the end of it.
Well, as you know, and I think, RJ, we've talked about this before, in ancient times, the seal of medicine was the staff with one serpent, and that was the sign of the healer. Today, if you go to any hospital and you look at the caduceus, it has two snakes. And that's the sign of the merchant. And I think that's very, very appropriate because medicine is no longer necessarily about healing. It's now a hybridization between health and money. And I'll be the first one to say that I don't think health is the primary concern in our system anymore.
No, I think doctors at some point in time stopped trying to make a living and started making a killing. And then that made the whole industry topsy-turvy. And there's also the idea of specialization and research. A lot of our money is being eaten up by cancer research. And what people don't understand is that cancer research is about creating cancer, you know, it seems. I don't know if you have a thought about that.
Well, I know that there's a great book. It was written, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago called The Cancer Industry. And there are a lot of people and a lot of institutions which are very, very dependent on this, quote, war on cancer. And if for some reason cancer went away, a lot of people would be out a lot of money. And I'm not in any way implying that you know, great work isn't being done. But it's, you know, when you read this book, it's a real eye-opener. And there's a lot of cures. That, you know, a lot of people feel are not being explored. A lot of people have to go to different parts of the world to get what they feel is good care. And again, the AMA and medicine protects, these institutions from maybe very, very simple cures. I don't know. For example, I was reading even last night about Linus Pauling and vitamin C. Now, I'm in no way an advocate for megadoses of vitamin C, but here you had a two-time Nobel Prize winner, and basically when he said, hey, look, you know, megadoses of vitamin C are a cure for cancer, he was basically ostracized. And I'm not in any way saying vitamin C is a cure for cancer, but again, anybody who wants to dream or think out of the box is immediately attacked and isolated. So, you know, we really have to allow for the possibility, and herbal medicine, and, you know, there's a thing I was reading this week about Noni. I mean, the Mayo Clinic or John Hopkins is now looking at, you know, herbs, but, You know, what do they throw, $1 million or $2 million into, you know, herbal medicine research and billions of dollars into these other directions? So
billions,
we're really...
Billions. Cut all kinds of corners to get their products out there. And we do have such wonderful products like Noni to do the work. It's a drying agent. Hello?
Yes, I agree with that.
Oh, I'm sorry I didn't interrupt you. You know, we're coming down to the end of the show. Oh, Mitch, I've got to do a little bit more in terms of letting people know what's going on. I want to thank you for calling in.
I want to thank you for your work and you keeping the flame alive and, you know, every week on, you know, your show, Mission Possible, and all the work that you've been doing over the years. I just want to do a special thank you for you in the darkness being a very bright light.
Oh, and I consider the source that's saying it, and I thank you for that. God bless you.
God bless you, Reverend.
All right. Well, you've just been listening to my friend, Mitch Fine, who is also Dr. Len's friend, and I'm sure Dr. Len is going to be tickled pink that Mitch called in and that we were able to touch base. He is one of his favorite people, and he's one of mine, too. I can't wait for him to get back to the Big Island. We have so much that we can do here, so much good. Yes, you are listening to BBSRadio.com, and I just want to tell you that it's brought to you by OxySilver.com, and I want you to go over there and check it out, and that's an order, because you can protect yourself from all the things that me and Mitch have been talking about, all those vicious little creatures that have been created in those labs, and the ones that are created just through the mutations. Remember, I will always tell you that in 1947, we were given the skinny on this whole thing. Look, if you stay away from high-energy radiation, if you stop irradiating things, don't be messing around with these high-energy radiations and low radiations and just trying to stay, you know, just with what's happening with the sun and all, we'll be just fine. But we did not heed that, and we started raising all these bacteria and viruses on irradiated substances. And I do believe that this is part of the whole mutations of the DNA gene. And the whole idea of DNA, RNA, and the whole thing, and it goes back to where you start messing around, putting rat blood in flies, in Drosophila fruit flies. You're going to put a rat gene. These things have been happening back in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. They were doing these things, and now it culminates in what's going on in your food. And, you know, I don't need to tell you anything else except for you to know the power of prayer and the power of the word in your life will allow you to counteract and put a lot of this. And with OxySilver, the mineral water of the millennium, you can maintain a good, healthy balance in your body. Eat good, treat yourself well, and know that we love you, and this is why we come. This is why Dr. Len is not going to stop. We're going to do this because he can help. And as they're trying to stampede the herd, we will be there for you to tell you what you need to do. And I'll be there for you, too, because I know we all are one. So therefore, we will continue under this sun, and that's that. So with that, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to finish out my little 2-3 minutes here. We have Don Nikoloff coming up with Evident Footprint. Stay tuned. I'm sure he's going to be all revved up for what's going on, and I'm sure he's got some special stuff he wants to discuss with you tonight. Dr. Len will be back with us next week. We'll be trying to do this thing live from where he will be in Massachusetts. And with that, I'm going to say good evening, good morning, good night.